A couple of months ago, my producer Emily Ulbricht walked into a New York soccer bar. An Italian league match was playing, so the bar was full of Italian expats. And Emily came here to ask them all one very specific question.
What's the first thing that comes to mind when you hear the name Byron Moreno?
If I have to be explicit, it was like a shitty asshole for us. It was like the worst ref that I never seen in my life.
He makes such crazy goal against Italy that was like really unthinkable.
We were probably the best team ever since 200 years. It was the best team available. And we just lost because of him.
One thing is sure, he will never be forgotten by any Italian man or woman, grandmother.
We definitely hate him. Like, it's probably the darkest page of our history.
The darkest page he's referring to is the 2002 World Cup match between Italy and South Korea. A game that Italy were huge favorites to win, but lost. A loss they blame on Byron Moreno. And the pain of this loss was so brutal, so everlasting, that now, 16 years later, the name Byron Moreno invokes fury, not just in soccer bars, but in all kinds of places in Italy. Because Byron Moreno's name has transcended sport and become a national insult. Like in the Italian parliament in 2015, when the politician Gianluca Castaldi compared the Speaker of the Senate to Byron Moreno. It was perceived as such a crass and extreme insult that the speaker banned Castaldi from speaking again. So it's not unusual for soccer fans to hate referees, to hurl abuse at them in the stadium, to sing rude songs. But that's usually where it ends. The final whistle is blown, and everyone moves on. But for a referee to still be a figure of hate 16 years later, and for their name to become a national insult, that's unusual. So how did Byron Moreno become the most infamous referee in World Cup history? Does he deserve that title? And what does he make of his legacy? Today, we find out. I'm Nando Vila, and from Gimlet Media, this is We Came to Win. To understand Byron Moreno and how he ended up becoming the world's most hated referee, we have to go way back. Back to the beginning. Byron Moreno was born in 1969. He grew up in Quito, the capital city of Ecuador. When Byron was young, he was a pretty good soccer player. And, like a lot of kids, his heroes came from soccer. But young Byron didn't just look up to the players, he also idolized the referees. See, Byron is from a family of rule makers. His father was a lawyer by trade, but he also worked for the Ecuadorian Football Federation, helping to assess the work of referees.
Well, I was always around football since I was born. I was around it and connected to it through my father. My father was a supervising referee, so I was with him and the other referees a lot. That's how I took a liking to refereeing. And I made the decision to sign up for a course in refereeing professional football. And I think it was one of the best decisions of my life.
Byron was only 18 when he officially became a referee. That's really young. Most refs are older than almost all of the players. So when he first started refereeing, it was an unusual sight, this teenager telling adults what to do. And Byron stood out for other reasons, too. So your classic referee is an intense-looking, older, super-fit guy who you can imagine waking up every morning to run 6 miles. Byron, he doesn't look like that. He's kind of barrel-chested, and he has these droopy eyelids that always seem to be half-closed. Like he's just woken up from a nap or something. So when he was starting out, not all of the players he was refereeing took him totally seriously. There was this one game, one of the first matches he took charge of, where Byron completely lost control of the game. Here's what happened. He sent a player off, and as the player was leaving the field, a fan said something like, "Are you going to let him get away with that?" So the player ran back onto the field, and in front of everyone, kicked Byron in the leg.
I was caught off guard. He landed the kick. So I stopped the match and I went to the locker room, and that's when the match ended.
This was a humiliating experience for young Byron. Not only had he lost control of the players, he'd been assaulted in front of everyone, including his father. Byron's father was at this game. He went to all of his son's matches. And after the game, he had some advice for Byron.
So then he called me over and he told me, "Look, that happened because you didn't have the personality or the power to impose your authority as a judge and make them understand without insulting them or anything through your presence and your decision that you're the person in charge here." That had an impact on me.
Byron took his father's advice to heart. He'd never let a player treat him like that again. From now on, Byron was going to let everyone know that he was in charge, no one else. He got a chance to prove that on the national stage in 1992 when he refereed a game between two of Ecuador's biggest teams, Delfín Sporting Club and Club Atlético Green Cross. This was the game where he'd proved to everyone that he was a tough referee. The kind of referee that follows the exact letter of the law, no matter what.
A los 16 minutos hubo un jugador que le pegó una patada fuerte.
16 minutes into the game, a player tackled a rival from behind. I sent him off. 5 minutes later, there were two players who attacked each other, one from Green Cross, one from Delfín. I sent off both. Afterwards, there was another player from Delfín that insulted an opposing player, and I sent him off too. Then a player from Green Cross threw the ball in the face of an opposing player, so I sent him off. After, there was a mutual fight, and the two left.
He flashed 7 red cards in that game. Okay, for context, there were 39 total red cards in the English Premier League last season. That comes out to about 1 red card in every 10 matches. Byron Moreno flashed 7 red cards in a single match. In the end, he threw out so many players that they had to end the match early. The crowd started rioting, throwing bottles at the pitch. Things got so crazy that the police had to come in and calm things down.
How did I get out of there? We left with a police escort. We had to go to the hotel to get our things and leave to another city with a police escort.
Word of Byron's actions quickly spread across Ecuador. And after this game, he was given a nickname. They called him El Justiciero. The sheriff. Not every referee would have handled the match the same way. A lot of referees would look at the context of the game when making an individual call. Like, if you've already sent off 4 dudes, maybe you don't send another guy off for an insult. But that wasn't Byron's way. He takes a dogmatic approach to the laws of the game. Because Byron thinks of referees like they're medieval knights, out to protect the honor of the sport they love. And red cards are their broadsword.
The players try to gauge your style. Players with long careers, much older, much more experience, a lot more tricks. My cards were my weapons, and that's how I began to make a name for myself. I have a code of conduct very attached to the rules. A lot of people have liked it, others not so much, because they say I'm too strict.
Byron's no-nonsense approach to refereeing got him a lot of attention. And just as he looked up to referees when he was growing up, aspiring referees started to idolize Byron. They wanted to be just like the sheriff. One of those refs was Luis Muentes. He's now the president of referees in Ecuador, but back then, he was just a young ref, and Byron Moreno was his hero.
Each time we had a chance to meet with him, well, it was a thing of admiring him. We wanted to be close to him and take pictures with him and things like that.
By the time he was in his mid-20s, Byron had been assigned to some of the most important matches in Ecuador. But a lot of people thought he wasn't just getting these gigs on merit alone. His father might have had something to do with it too. Because Byron's dad was one of Ecuador's supervising referees, and he was in charge of assigning refs to matches. Still, Byron quickly started making a name for himself outside of Ecuador. He refereed some huge matches in South America, including the final of the prestigious Copa Libertadores tournament. But there's one tournament that stands above them all for any referee, the World Cup. Because just as players dream of playing in a World Cup, referees dream of refereeing in a World Cup. And Byron was no different. He was desperate to make it to the tournament. And in December of 2001, after refereeing for almost 15 years, Byron finally got the call he'd been waiting for.
Yo estaba almorzando con mi familia.
I was having lunch with my family when my telephone rang. And I answered and said, yes, hello. He said, is this Byron? Yes, with whom am I speaking? He told me, it's Mr. Acosta, the secretary of Ecua Football. And so I say, how are you? How's it going? He says, Byron, I just called to tell you that the list of referees for the World Cup is out, and you are being chosen to go to Korea, Japan.
No, ya no puedo decir más porque ya hasta ahí me quedé yo. Y bueno, se me fueron las lágrimas.
At that point, I couldn't say anything else because that's when the tears started running.
After the news sunk in, Byron started to prepare himself. He was going to do everything he could to make sure he was ready for this World Cup.
Casi un mes antes de viajar al Mundial,
a month before traveling to the World Cup, I began to sleep and go about my life according to the time zone of Korea and Japan. When everyone was sleeping, I was training. And when everyone was awake, I was sleeping.
But that's not all. Byron actually sold his car so he could use the money to hire a personal trainer, a physical therapist, and a sports psychologist. When I picture him preparing for this World Cup, it's a little like the training montage in Rocky IV. But the difference here is that it's not one of the competitors sweating and toiling, it's the referee. In May of 2002, Byron went to South Korea for the World Cup. He arrived early to finish his preparation at a special training camp for the tournament's referees. Then, after all the months of hard work, Byron finally stepped out onto the field to referee his first World Cup game.
Portugal will be in the maroon jerseys with the gold trim. The United States in the white jerseys with the blue trim. The referee is Byron Moreno of Ecuador.
Byron's first match was between the USA and Portugal. There was a lot at stake here, and not just for the players, for Byron too. If he did well in this game, he might be chosen to continue in the tournament and to referee another game in the World Cup's knockout phase. And if that went well, who knows? He could make it to the final.
So if you go to the World Cup, what you hope and aspire to is to officiate the most amount of matches, or rather to participate in the most amount of matches at the World Cup. That's what you aim for.
And in this USA-Portugal game, Byron put in a good performance. It was a fiercely competitive match with some tough players on both sides. But Byron kept control, didn't let the game get out of hand, and didn't go too crazy with his cards. The tournament's refereeing committee must have liked what they saw because Byron was assigned another game in the knockout round. And not just any game, a really big one. Italy versus tournament co-hosts South Korea in the round of 16.
Welcome to the Daejeon Stadium, where the first second round match.
South Korea's team was not terribly talented, and it was a surprise they'd made it this far. But they were backed by a hugely passionate and massively loud home support. Meanwhile, Italy's lineup was incredible, stacked with soccer legends like Francesco Totti, Paolo Maldini, and Gigi Buffon. They were expected to win easily and move on to the quarterfinals. The game kicked off, and within the first 5 minutes, Byron made his presence known. He called a penalty on Italy when an Italian defender pulled a Korean player's shirt in the box. That's technically against the rules, yes. But it's not something that most refs tend to enforce. It's kind of like getting a speeding ticket for going 60 in a 55. But this is Byron Moreno we're talking about. The sheriff. Always ready to flash his badge. The Italians, understandably, were pissed off. But Korea missed the penalty. And the rest of the 90 minutes pretty much passed by without Byron having to make any more big calls. Italy scored, South Korea tied the game, and then the match went into extra time.
It's extra time!
And it was here that Byron Moreno would make some decisions that would define his career. The Italians are pressing forward, trying to take control of the game. A long ball is launched into the box, and Italy's star player, Francesco Totti, spins past the defender and surges towards the goal. He's about to take the shot when a Korean player lunges in to make a tackle.
Totti in the arc. Totti turns it. Goes down.
Totti's on the ground now, felled by the Korean defender. Byron Moreno blows his whistle, and everyone in the stadium is expecting the same call. A penalty for Italy. But Byron Moreno did something else. Something no one was expecting.
There's a call coming. It's going to be a dive on Totti, and he's out of the game. It's his second yellow.
Instead of awarding Italy a penalty kick, Byron gives Totti a yellow card for diving or pretending to be fouled.
I think it's a bad call. We'll have to look at the replay. I believe it was a fair tackle.
And since it's Totti's second yellow card, he's sent off the field. This is a complete disaster for Italy, and the players are furious. Totti throws his hands in the air and walks away, incredulous. Totti's teammates circle around Byron, screaming in his face. But Byron just stands there, staring off into the distance, holding that game-changing red card defiantly above his head, his arm straight as an arrow.
Francesco Totti leaves the field.
Things simmer down and the game restarts. But then another contentious incident. Italian midfielder Damiano Tomasi is played through and looks certain to score.
Pieri. And still there's a man behind, but he's offside.
But the assistant referee raises his flag for offside. Now, Byron Moreno has a choice here. Accept the assistant referee's decision or allow play to continue. But again, Byron rules against Italy and stops the play. In frustration, the Italian striker Cristian Vieri drops to the ground. He cradles his head in his hands and looks defeated. A few minutes later, the inevitable sucker punch. South Korea score. The game ends 2-1. Italy has lost, and they are out of the tournament. After the game was over, Byron stepped off the field and away from the angry Italian players and the 40,000-plus fans in the stadium that night. And he did what a lot of us do in times of stress. He called home. His father wasn't at the World Cup. He was back in Quito. And Byron wanted to ask him if he made the right call, if he was right to send Totti off in extra time.
So the moment the match ended, what I do is I grab a phone and I call Ecuador. I greet him and he says, how are you feeling? I say, I'm tired. I was tired. I had been running for more than 2 hours. And the only thing I asked him was if he saw the play before the send-off. And he told me that it was fine. The Korean player got to the ball first, and then Toti let himself drop. Okay, thanks. That's all, I said. Talk later, bye.
For Byron Moreno, that was the only opinion that really mattered. As long as his father thought he made the right call, that was good enough for him. And back in Ecuador, people were proud of him. The way they saw it, he refereed the Italy game with courage. He didn't back down when the Italians protested. The sheriff stood firm. But in Italy, people had a very different reaction to Byron's refereeing performance. Here's a clip from an Italian sports talk show that aired the night of the game. Here's what the announcer is saying. I am angry this evening. Referee, shame. Korea, shame. World Cup, scandal. Italy eliminated by a scam. Personally, never in the many years of my career have I seen such misdeeds on any of the soccer fields in the world. And in all the houses, in all the offices, in all the piazzas of Italy, people have been repeating these words. Shame, scandal, scam, fraud, conspiracy. For days after the match, Byron's performance was front page news. Corriere dello Sport, the biggest Italian newspaper, ran a headline that read, Ladri, thieves, in big black capital letters. Another simply said, Vergogna, shame. And FIFA was hit with over 500,000 angry emails complaining about Byron. The sheer volume of hate mail was enough to crash the FIFA server. And it didn't end there. The satirical band Gem Boy recorded a cover of the biggest hit of the summer, Zucchero's song Baila Morena, but changed the lyrics to Drop Dead Moreno. Drop Dead Moreno. Either you're bot or you're stupid. Drop Dead Moreno. Under a train. Drop Dead Moreno with that stupid face. Drop Dead Moreno. That line, either you're bot or you're stupid, that became the question that loomed over Byron Moreno. If he just made some controversial calls, or if he had fixed the match in Korea's favor. After the break, we ask him. After that fateful Italy-South Korea game, Byron Moreno took a vacation. The Italian team went back to Italy, but the World Cup continued. And South Korea went on to their next match, the quarterfinal, where they played Spain. My family's Spanish, so I remember watching this game. And the referee, an Egyptian guy named Al Gandor, made some calls that were really strange.
Joaquin, Morientes, no, no, flag was up.
The strangest call of all, a goal by Spain's striker Fernando Morientes was called back for out of bounds when replays show the ball was clearly not out of bounds.
Well, Morientes left frustrated.
South Korea won the match, and to a lot of people following the tournament, it felt like the Italy game all over again. Spanish fans, just like the Italians, were heartbroken. These two games were just days apart, and they were both against South Korea. That didn't seem like a coincidence. A lot of soccer fans started to think that something fishy was going on. That maybe FIFA, soccer's governing body, had encouraged referees to rule their matches in South Korea's favor. Investigative journalist Andrew Jennings is someone who believed that was true.
What do you think about FIFA?
They're bent. They're corrupt. FIFA was an organized crime syndicate, and I'm no doubt about saying that.
In 2006, Jennings published a book called Foul, The Secret World of FIFA, Bribes, Vote Rigging, and Ticket Scandals. And since then, he's been at the forefront of reporting that has helped expose FIFA corruption. Jennings started investigating FIFA in 2002, right around that World Cup in South Korea and Japan. And he has a hunch about what happened in those South Korea games and why the referees appeared to be favoring the hosts. He thinks it all comes down to ticket sales. See, FIFA was having trouble filling seats in South Korea for the 2002 World Cup. That's because most soccer fans live in the Americas or Europe, and Korea is a very long and very expensive plane ride away. Jennings thinks that FIFA realized that the best way to get Koreans to buy tickets was to ensure that the host team kept winning.
The important thing was to get Korea as far as they could, round by round. They just had to, in order to fill the stadium, they had to cheat.
And this is where Jennings thinks Byron Moreno comes in. According to him, it's no coincidence that Byron and the Egyptian referee who was assigned to Korea's next game were from smaller soccer federations. Jennings' theory is that FIFA picked referees from these nations because they were easier to influence. And Jennings thinks Byron was told that FIFA wanted Korea to win.
He knew who had to win.
But you don't necessarily know whether he was either given a bribe or threatened. How would he be threatened?
It wouldn't take much threatening because if he didn't do as he was told, he wouldn't get any more foreign trips. And that's the end of it. Nobody would want him as a referee. He would be an ex-referee.
Now, it has to be said that this is just a theory. There's no proof that Byron Moreno was bribed or coerced or pressured into favoring Korea. And although many FIFA officials have been arrested since this tournament, none of the arrests have had anything to do with the 2002 World Cup. And not everyone agrees with Andrew Jennings. If you look at the game through the lens of everything we know about FIFA, it's easy to get suspicious. But if you're just watching that game without that context, it's a lot less clear. Daniele Manusia is an Italian journalist, and he grew up assuming that Byron Moreno was corrupt. But he recently wrote an article for Vice Italy where he rewatched the entire game, and he started to reevaluate things.
If you watch the game now, 15 years later, it's difficult to think that his mistakes were premeditated and that he really was corrupted.
What Manusia started to see rewatching the game was that maybe the reason Italy lost was because they just sucked that day. I mean, Christian Vieri, their star striker, had an absolute stinker, missing chance after chance.
And I think that's more important than the red card to Totti. But nobody talk about that. Nobody talk about Trapattoni's choices. Nobody talk about Vieri's misses. They talk about Byron Moreno.
And the way Manusia sees it, there was something else that factored into Byron becoming the fall guy for so many Italian fans. Something that had nothing to do at all with his refereeing performance, and everything to do with his appearance and where he came from.
He was the perfect villain because you know nothing about him. He's exotic because he's from South America. He had this cartoonish face with this strange expression, like he was making irony all the time, with his fish eyes, with his strange haircut, like he was in the 50s. Nobody liked him from the first sight. I think he really was a concentrate of bad things, a concentrate of bad ideas, bad stereotypes. I think there was a bit of racism too, and so it's like that.
Everyone seems to have their own theory about Byron Moreno and about what happened that day. Some, like Manusia, think that he's been treated harshly and that the only thing he's guilty of is having a bad haircut. Others say he's a crook and that if he didn't send Totti off in extra time, Italy could have gone on to win the World Cup. At the end of the day, there's only one person who really knows what happened. One person who really knows why Byron Moreno made the calls he did. And that's Byron Moreno. So I asked him, did you fix the South Korea-Italy match?
¿Amañó el partido entre Corea e Italia?
Nunca.
Never.
I told him about Andrew Jennings' theory, that the Koreans had trouble selling tickets, that they needed to fill the stadiums, and needed the Korean team to advance in the tournament. I asked, did anyone explain this to you before the match?
Interesado que Corea avance. O sea, ¿esto usted, a usted alguien le explicó esto antes del partido o no?
No, nunca, para nada.
Never. Not at all.
Para nada.
Not at all.
I spent a couple hours on the phone with Byron, going through all the controversial calls he made in the Italy game, one by one. The penalty, the Totti red card, the offside. But he stands by his decisions, all of them.
Así es. Cero dudas.
That's right. Zero doubts.
I asked him if he thinks that some referees at the World Cup might be pressured to favor certain teams.
¿Eso existe en el arbitraje mundial o no?
Unfortunately, I'd like to say no. But cases have come up that prove that it can.
Finally, I asked him one last time, did anyone ever pressure you to favor South Korea?
Pero a ti ni intentaron presionarte. O sea, nadie te intentó presionar.
Jamás.
Jamás.
Never.
Jamás.
Never.
Jamás.
Never.
After that 2002 World Cup ended, life went on for Byron. He went back to work, started refereeing again. But later that year, something happened that once again cast doubt on his refereeing in that infamous South Korea-Italy game. Byron was in charge of a match between Ecuador's two biggest teams, Liga de Quito and Barcelona de Guayaquil. At the end of 90 minutes, Barcelona de Guayaquil was ahead 3-2. But instead of blowing the final whistle, Byron let the game go on. That might sound strange, but referees usually do add a few extra minutes at the end of a game. It's called injury time. But in this game, Byron seemed to be adding an unusual amount of time. Liga de Quito scored and tied the game. And then Byron let the game continue as Liga pressed for a winner. Luis Muentes is the referee who once idolized Byron Moreno. He remembers watching this unfold.
It reached the point that the now president of Barcelona, who was a Barcelona goalie then, knelt in front of Byron, begging him to end the game. And Byron, no, he kept going and added enough time to the game until they scored and the game ended there.
By the time Byron blew the final whistle, Liga de Quito had scored again and won the match. And for a lot of people, it looked an awful lot like Byron Moreno was keeping the game going as long as it took for Liga to win the match.
So it was a situation that I never thought I would see, and never, it stayed with me. That is, it was so engraved in my mind, it was something so horrific that it shocked Ecuadorian soccer and the country in general.
In total, Byron added 13 minutes of injury time to the game. That's much, much longer than you see in normal soccer matches. Again, fingers were pointed at Byron. Some said that he fixed the match in Liga de Quito's favor because he wanted to boost his popularity in the city. And that's because, in 2002, Byron Moreno was running for office in Quito.
Liga de Quito is one of the most popular teams, and he was a candidate for the city council of Quito. He wanted to have the sympathy of the Liga fans.
Others had a much more simple explanation. Byron had been bribed. He fixed the match because that's what he had been paid to do. But regardless of the theory, Muentes says it's a game that lives on in the memory of many Ecuadorians.
And that simply they stole the game from Barcelona, as they say here. And until today, nobody has forgotten it. The journalists don't forget. We, the referees, don't forget. The fans don't forget. No, nobody has forgotten.
That Liga de Quito game was a huge scandal in Ecuador, and it got Byron suspended for 20 matches. Byron maintained his innocence. He said that he was just following the rules, as he always did. In 2003, Byron returned to refereeing. So, you might expect him to lay low in his first few matches, not do anything too controversial. Not Byron. In one of his first matches back, he flashed 3 red cards. The league suspended him again, and he promptly retired. It would be the last professional game he'd ever referee. I asked Byron about his decision to retire. He said it was a matter of principle. He wanted to referee his way or not at all.
On April 1st, 2013, I decided to retire from refereeing.
Fue una decisión muy difícil, muy dura.
It was a difficult decision, very hard. Because in my life, my passion was always refereeing, and it still is refereeing. But there are lessons in life that I learned.
Prefiero morir de pie que vivir de rodillas.
I would rather die on my feet than live on my knees. And I had to make the decision to retire from refereeing, to which I owe absolutely everything.
When Byron's refereeing career started to fall apart, he didn't have too many options. But one place where he was still in demand was Italy. Long after the World Cup, Italians still loved to hate Byron Moreno. And so he cashed in on his notoriety and played himself on a TV show. It was an Italian comedy show called Stupido Hotel. Byron makes a few appearances, and the joke is always a variation on the same thing. Byron wrongly issuing a red card, his face blank and stoic as always. Or Byron accepting a bribe and walking around with a briefcase full of money. Or in classic comedy fashion, Byron getting a bucket of water dumped over his head. And this might have been where Byron's time in the spotlight ended, when he just fade away into obscurity. But something happened in 2010 that thrust him back into the headlines.
El ex-árbitro internacional Byron Moreno fue detenido.
He was caught at JFK Airport with 6 kilos of heroin hidden in his underwear, and he was sent to prison. When the news that Byron was a convicted drug smuggler made it back to Italy, a lot of people felt vindicated. This was the evidence that proved Byron Moreno was corrupt. Gigi Buffon, Italy's goalkeeper in the South Korea game, was quoted saying, 6 kilos of drugs? I believe Moreno had this already in 2002, but not in his underwear, in his body. But, as with so much of Byron's story, things aren't black and white. Because according to Byron, he didn't smuggle heroin to get rich or because he's some sort of criminal mastermind. He did it because he had no choice. Byron told us that he got into financial trouble after his son was born with severe health issues. He needed to borrow money to cover the hospital bills. And Byron says the only people who would lend him the money were cartel bosses, who forced him to smuggle drugs. Byron was released from prison in December of 2012, and he went home to Ecuador. For the next 5 years, he laid low. But Byron just couldn't stay away from the sport he loves. And even though he couldn't referee anymore, he still wanted to be involved with soccer. So in 2017, he launched his own radio show. It's a typical sports talk radio show, where the listeners chime in about their favorite plays and their least favorite calls. It's a lively show. Byron and his co-hosts like to break out into song, and they go nuts when they react to controversial calls.
Hey!
Lo que va.
¡Ay!
Lo, por Dios.
¡Penal!
¡Penal!
Byron is reacting to a very controversial penalty call at the end of a tense match between Real Madrid and Juventus.
Yo estoy feliz que pase esto. Porque ahora se van a olvidar de Byron Moreno.
And what he's saying is that he was happy the ref made the call because now people would talk about him and they would forget about Byron Moreno. Now, Byron might joke about wanting to be forgotten, but he's also proud of his legacy. And even though he hasn't refereed an official match for over 10 years, when he talks about referees, he says, "We referees." And he defends them if they make controversial calls, the kind of calls that he used to make. When I spoke to him, it was the day after that hotly debated penalty call in the Real Madrid-Juventus game. And again, Byron stood up for the referee.
And I'll tell you another thing. If it were up to me, I'd bring yesterday's referee to the World Cup.
Me parece muy bien. Venga.
¿Sabes por qué? Porque con lo que hizo, me demostró.
Do you know why? Because with what he did, he proved to me that he has the personality and he has the guts to be at the World Cup. Not just anyone could make such a difficult decision so clearly.
Yeah.
So after all of the months of reporting, of interviewing people, of reading up on Byron, I still don't really know what to make of him. There's some really compelling arguments to say that Byron Moreno fixed the Italy versus South Korea match. But it's just as likely that the calls he made that day were just Byron being Byron. But there is one thing I know for sure. The most notorious referee in World Cup history loved being a referee. It's in his blood. It's in his bones. Talking to him, you get a sense of how much it meant for him to be in charge of a match. To be the one responsible for upholding the rules of the game. And of how much he wanted to referee the biggest games and to make it to the World Cup. Sure, things didn't go to plan once he made it there, but it's clear that Byron is still proud of his career and proud to be a referee.
Como yo digo, los árbitros somos una especie en extinción.
To be a referee isn't a profession that the whole world wants to pursue. We referees are an endangered species. There are very few of us who have the courage to take on this profession. A misunderstood profession, a mistreated, overlooked profession, a profession that doesn't count on all the support it should have.
Yeah. Bueno.
Listo.
Venga.
Hasta okay, luego. Un abrazo.
Adiós.
Chao. Chao, chao.
Our starting forward for this story is producer Emily Ulbricht. Out on the wings are producers Emma Morgenstern and Gofan Mputubwele. Our super subs waiting to step onto the field and score a goal or cut some voice tracks are Jasmine Romero and Anna Foley. Our captain, who has never been shown a red card in his life, is senior producer Matt Nelson. Our coaches are editors Caitlin Kenny, Devin Taylor, and Jessica Weisberg. Our fact checker is Max Gibson, and he's never made a bad call in his life. Sound design, music, and mixing by the one and only Bobby Lord. Our voice actors are Luis Eduardo Mora, Tony Chiroldes, and Dani Zaldivar. Special thanks to Jorge Estrada, Guglielmo Matiolo, Cynthia Flores, Santiago Guerrero, Ettore Intorcia, Urs Meyer, and the Lazio Club New York. I am the host with a bit of a reputation for diving, Nando Vila. Next week, we'll hear the story of the Spanish women's national team, who protested years of mistreatment by their coach by writing an open letter calling for him to be fired.
We knew and we were 100% sure that we were doing the right thing.
We Came to Win is a production of Gimlet Media in association with Fusion. If you like the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. I'm sure this episode will generate some discussion, so tweet at us using the hashtag WeCameToWin.